Ahoy, Vachon. How's the French say, Vachon? This is the Brown Briefly, where less is more, more or less, coming to you live over KVSH 101.9 FM, Voice of Vachon, your island connection. Please make us part of your day. And be advised that our assertions and views, which can modestly be described as progressive persuasion, do not in any way reflect the opinions of KVSH or Voice of Vachon.
That was the voice. That was the voice of Brian Brown, creator of the Brown Briefly. Brian started the Briefly and brought his high standards of hosting an intelligent discussion of current events laced with humor and empathy. Brian's central concept was less is more, more or less, and he invariably offered much, much more. Today, let me introduce the Brieflies and our guest. So guiding us from behind the board at Voice of Vachon's Jean Bosch broadcast studio in bustling and bodacious downtown Vachon, and keeping us on course, even if maybe into the treetops, is former airline pilot, treetop landing aficionado, flight instructor, Vachon Airport Commissioner, West Texas devotee, and former military intelligence specialist. My tongue trips over that, Truman.
I can understand
Truman
that.
Truman O'Brien. Good morning, Truman.
Hey, good morning. Good morning. My tongue trips a little over that myself. Yeah, I get it. But good morning, everyone.
Good. Usually sitting next to Truman, but at home nursing the Vachon crud that's sort of going around, is his fellow treetop aficionado, arbitrator, mediator, two-time half-bright, full-bright scholar, or is that fully bright, half-bright scholar? I'm not sure which it is. High-end women's shoe salesperson, former constitutional law professor, and Washington State Assistant Attorney General, Craig Bellis. How are you this morning, Craig? And how is the crud doing?
Well, I'm hanging in there. I'm fine. It hasn't totally knocked me out, but it's weird. It snuck up on me, a little sore throat, and all of a sudden, having trouble sleeping and pains, aches and pains. Getting old's a problem.
It is for all of us.
Yeah.
Also zooming in from home is the voice of Indivisible Vachon and the Vachon Climate Action Group, our indefatigable defender of democracy who strives to create a livable planet overseen by a government we can all appreciate or at least tolerate, Kevin Jones. Welcome, Kevin.
Thank you. Well, good to be here. And I'm also advocating today for a government that pays its financial obligations.
Yeah.
Definitely. We shall see, right? The clock is ticking, yeah. They say. Right?
I mean, I do. I think we all do, but it's just for some reason.
Mm. And I am Bruce Hallman. I'm zooming in from the bluffs above KVI Beach, and I'm sort of fighting off the same crud that Craig is fighting off. Apparently, has been sweeping through the island, and all of my kids, all of our grandkids have it, but Pam, fortunately, has not caught it yet, so I'm keeping my fingers crossed. And then joining us today are Mike Sadeth and Kim Von Henkel from the Burton History Trail. Kim, how are you doing today?
I'm good. Thank you. Glad to be here. Thanks, Bruce.
And you had the crud that Craig and I are fighting, right? So there is a light at the end of the tunnel?
There's light. Recovery ahead.
Okay. And you're sure it's not a railroad engine coming to crush us, right? And Mike Sadeth, how are you today?
I couldn't be better. Thanks for having me.
All right. And you're staying healthy?
I am. So far, knock on wood.
Good. Before we jump into talking about the Burton History Trail and the community meeting scheduled for next Sunday, June 4th at Camp Burton, let's take a moment and check in with everyone about what special things you've experienced this past week. Truman, what's going on in your world?
Well, I have there's a new tenant out at the airport, a young couple that have a Cessna that they purchased and are leasing a hangar there. And the pilot in the family is the wife. And the husband has always wanted to learn to fly, And so I said, well, okay, I don't want to take on a full-time student, but I'm getting him started. I got him signed up with the FAA so he can get his student pilot certificate, and I've done a little flying with him, and he's doing very, very well. I'm very impressed. He's going to be a quick study, but hopefully I'll just get him started and send him off to a real instructor to get finished. So,
great. Oh, good. Hey, Truman, I was just reading, doing some research the other day, and noticed that Vashon's Airport District is Airport District Number 1, the first King County Airport District.
That is correct. Formed in 1946.
Yeah, very interesting. Yeah. So Vashon had the first county ferry district, ferry district number 1, and now the airport district number 1. So finding out all these interesting things about Vashon.
I can tell you that one of the other commissioners is Bob Thirkelson. I don't know if you know Bob, but Bob is in his 90s now, and that guy is a walking encyclopedia. He has got a memory like I cannot believe.
And he is amazing.
Somebody needs to sit down with a tape recorder and just record that guy for about 3 days. Yeah.
Well, exactly. Bruce Morser and I both interviewed him and talked to him quite a bit.
Oh, yeah.
Bruce Morser was working on that installation for Celebrating Center.
Right.
Because Bob grew up right across from the Vashon Center for the Arts.
Yeah, he was born in the Fuller Store building. In fact, in Francisco's barbershop is the room he was born in.
and he was a young man when the Zarth's garage was there, and the explosion that ultimately killed Zarth. And he ran over and helped put out the flames, and he must have been 8 or 9 years old at the time, so a relatively young kid. But interesting.
Yeah.
So, Mike Suddeth, how about you? What's been going on in your world besides Bashan?
Well, we were treated to this year's new crop of fawns. Wow. And we've got a pair of them that are out in our back field that come and visit us a couple times a day. So that's always a joy in the spring to see.
That's great.
It is exciting. You do have your deer fence up, though, right?
We do.
Craig, other than fighting off the crud, what's been happening with you?
Well, actually, it was a weekend of social activities. I think that's probably where I picked this up. I don't know exactly from whom, but wonderful weekend, holiday weekend, a serious holiday, holiday weekend. Doing some work on one of my old cars, doing some electrical work, rewiring some driving lights and whatnot. And cleaning up our hangar, Truman and my hangar out at the airport for the beginning of several small parties that the Voice of Vashon is going to be doing for donors. So we thought that we would have the first one at the hangar. By the way, in terms of historical fact, and Truman, you can correct me if I'm wrong on this, not only is Vashon municipal airport number 1, but it is the only municipal airport in the state of Washington that has a grass field. That's my understanding. Is that right?
Just slight addition, and that is a grass field with hangars. There is there's one of the grass field, I think, but we're the only one with hangars. So there you go. Yep.
Always a challenge landing and taking off on a soaking wet runway. That's grass.
Yeah.
Well, you guys do it successfully, right? Most of the time.
Most of the time, right? So far. Yeah.
So Kim, how about you? What's been going on in your world this week?
We had an opportunity last week to go visit old and very dear friends who now live in the San Juan Islands. And after what I've been reading about what happened over the Memorial Day weekend, we felt incredibly lucky that we had, those two ferry trips are always a little tricky, but we had great ferry luck, both getting up there and getting back again. Mm-hmm. So not only good ferry luck, but just, spending time with old friends, which is comforting, relaxing, and lovely.
Yeah, great.
Oh, very good. You won the ferry lotto, it sounds like. You made it up there and back.
Alive, yeah.
That's right, yeah. So, Kevin, how about you?
It's been busy. You mentioned wildlife. So we heard the coyotes in our neighborhood earlier this week, quite vocal one evening. And so I'm sure that there's also deer around. We only had one deer sighting recently, but what I am seeing is they're munching on the deer salad bar, which is mainly the new stuff I planted in the ground, like the cedar trees and the maple trees. So those are now all fenced in. So that's a big accomplishment. Also got the stern tie line mounted on the Opus. And boats now got its conventional list to starboard with that extra weight on the boat. And this last few days had a chance to go out to the Olympics and go up to the top of Mount Zion, which is a place I've long had on my list and finally got there. Beautiful sunny summer day with great views all around. So,
was there keeping up? There wasn't a burning bush up there, was there? Oh, that's what Sinai.
Yeah. I didn't close. See. We didn't, close. And nor did we light anything on fire. So far, so good.
Maybe you can enlighten our listeners about why you need a stern tie line on Opus.
Well, it all depends on where you go, but mainly if you are anchoring. Some of those anchorages can be pretty full in the summertime, and some of them, those little really cozy, quaint anchorages that grace the covers of the cruising magazines, sometimes there's only room for like your boat, and it can't swing very far. So you drop the hook, you back up towards shore, you get in your dinghy, you row over to the shore with the stern line just firmly attached to the boat in all instances, and you run up, scramble up the shore. You either find hopefully something that's been installed, like a chain or something you can tie off your line to, as opposed to a tree, which may get damaged. And then you cinch up the anchor line and the stern tie line, and your boat is sitting there in place, not swinging into the rocks, and enjoy the view from there.
And some of those anchorages are actually so deep that you can almost step off your stern onto shore. So you definitely don't want to be swinging in those situations. So thanks for that.
Yeah, and depending on how far north you go, which is a hope that we will, some of the shoreline drops off so steeply into the water that you might be anchoring in 100 to 200 feet of water, and there's no way to pay out enough line to hold on that. So you drop the hook on the side of the mountain that's down below the water, you tie off the stern of your boat to the mountain that's above the water, and miraculously you stay in place. At least that's the plan.
Hopefully, at least, right?
Yeah, that's the plan.
Exactly.
Sounds good.
And speaking of boats, Bruce, your Vashon has disappeared. Where's she off to?
Oh, she was down in Olympia over the weekend. Davidson, Commodore of the Yacht Club, borrowed the boat for the weekend to go to a Quartermaster Yacht Club cruise down to Olympia. So sort of the first time out of the slip for any length of time this summer. And we're trying to get her
right. A maiden voyage.
Yep, yeah, maiden voyage, if you will. And like any maiden voyage, there's certainly challenges along the way, as they say, right? But she performed well. She's, I think, now safe back in her slip. So my week has been like Craig's a bit. My illness started at the end of last week, last Thursday. So my weekend was not as celebratory as I would have liked it to have been. I was in bed much of the weekend and sort of lying low, but feeling better today. That's what I hope, at least.
Celebratory or celebratory?
Yeah.
A little of both, right?
A little of both.
So today, significant day. Today, May 30th, is the official day, former official day, of Memorial Day. It's the day in 1868 the Commander-in-Chief John A. Logan of the Grand Army of the Republic issued General Order Number 11 designating May 30th as a Memorial Day, quote, for the purpose of strewing with flowers or otherwise decorating the graves of comrades who died in defense of their country during the late rebellion. and whose bodies now lie in almost every city, village, and hamlet, churchyard in the land. So the Grand Army of the Republic was sort of the veterans of the Union side of the Civil War. And that's really the beginning of Memorial Day, the official Memorial Day. But interestingly, and I just was reading this a couple of days ago, apparently the first Memorial Day was on May 1st, 1865, when freed African-Americans in Charleston, South Carolina, held a parade and decorated the graves of the Union soldiers who had died to liberate them. So beginning to get a fuller sort of history of Memorial Day. And of course, in the 1850s, it actually began as Decorating Day, or Decoration Day, a day to go out and decorate graves and clean up graveyards and that kind of thing. So interesting history of Memorial Day. This is also the day in 1431 that Joan of Arc was burned at the stake. She led the French army in a momentous victory over England at Orleans, and then during the Hundred Year War, but was charged with heresy and witchcraft and burned at the stake. So a warning for any woman who takes leadership positions in a hierarchical, patriarchal society.
No kidding.
And then in 1911, it was first in the Indianapolis 500 automobile race. It was run and won by Roy Harron in 6 hours and 42 minutes. The race this year was won by Joseph Newgarden in 2 hours and 58 minutes, you know, average speed of about 250 miles an hour. Memorial Day weekend, Indianapolis 500 and all that. Yeah, Craig.
Most of those 2 hours were spent in the last 10 laps.
Yes, right.
Three major accidents. They had to start the race over and over and over.
Oh my God!
Right. Very controversial sort of end to this race this year. So let's take some time and talk about the Burton History Trail with Mike and with Kim. So Mike, maybe tell us a little bit about yourself. Tell us about the Burton History Trail and how you got involved in working with Vashon history.
Sure. Born and raised on the island. I grew up in Docton and graduated from high school here. My family goes back to 1920 when they first came to Vashon. So we've been around a while. I've lived in Burton for this is my 45th year living here in Burton. And I'm on the board of directors with the museum and interested in history. And so I joined the group that's working on this Burton History Trail project. The Burton History Trail isn't a trail per se. It's not like you're walking down Center Forest or Shinger Mill Creek. It's more of a routing. Think of it as a routing where it's more you're going down going around a block type thing in the town of Burton. Some good examples. The best example right now is Docton Trail. Several years ago, they put in 10 or 12 signs starting down at Docton Park and then going up to down Dock Street, down to Stuckey Avenue, and around the block back up to the Docton store and then returning to Docton Park. And these 10 or 12 signs have historical information about the start of Docton, the dry dock, the schools, the hotels, the Croatian fishermen industry, shipbuilding, and that kind of thing. Tahlequah has an historical sign down by the ferry terminal, just the one sign right now, although there's hopes to expand that. Ellisport put together an extensive history trail that they've primarily got on paper, and they're getting close to actually producing the signs to put around the community. So that's what a history trail is. Liza Beula has the I'm going to say it's not the Sestraps. Ernst family is interested in doing a similar sign down at Liza Beula, down at the park, to capture both the history of that neighborhood with the dance hall and some of the things that were back down at the park, as well as the maritime history with the building of the Virginia class boats. So there's another history trail that is being looked at. And so we think Burton has such a deep history with the old college, and there was quite a settlement of the Shobop Swiftwater people here in Burton and around the Quartermaster Harbor. That's an important story to tell. And Burton has this deep history that as you drive north from the south end and turn the corner from the water, and all of a sudden you're thrust back 100 years into this quaint little community. And I think people would be interested in finding out what used to be here.
Great. Thanks, Mike. Yeah. Kim, tell us a little bit about yourself and how you got involved with this, and a little bit about how you see the trail developing.
I guess I'm a relative newcomer to the island and to Burton, having moved here 15 years ago, which sometimes seems like a short time, other times a long time. I think that all of us in our planning group have, you know, our own personal reasons for becoming involved with the trail. For me, you know, my house is almost 100 years old, and I want to know who came before me here in this community. You know, starting as with Mike was talking about our really deep and rich Indigenous presence here, and also just wanting to know more about, you know, who forged homes here, who forged businesses, so that we all can follow and continue to be here. You know, my family and our neighbors to keep telling our stories. That connection seems really important to me. I think, you know, as well as understanding history so that we continue to learn and to remember what came before us, all the good and all the bad, you know, in the way that we live and work and connect going forward. I would also say I really appreciate that just the community energy in you know, if someone has an idea, another person joins and more people come and bring their stories and energy. And I have just really loved getting to know you, Bruce, and Mike, and others that are on our planning group. Thanks.
Great. Tell us a little, maybe Mike or Kim, tell us a little bit about the move to create a Burton water system and how that has played into this.
Kim is involved in the Burton Water Company formation of the co-op, so I'll let her respond to that. But it's certainly stirred a sense of community here. So,
and I would add, I guess, you know, the projects are entirely separate. Mm-hmm. The whole idea of a Burton Water Cooperative began with the current owners deciding to sell. Choices. This is a long story. I'll try to make it one sentence. The choices at the time, well, and still are, pretty much community ownership or corporate ownership. And I think, in as we learned from many of our neighbors and community here, the idea of corporate ownership, maybe particularly since we're Vashon, was not a value that settled well with a lot of people. So energy began with the cooperative ownership idea and is still moving along.
Oh, good. Yeah, it is a fascinating sort of story of how the community confronted with an issue sort of pulls together and starts to develop a community consciousness that was certainly there in the past, but not to the degree that it seems to be right now. So
for something like water, which we take for granted, generates a lot of emotion, actually.
particularly when you don't have it, right?
Right. And so the shared value is really important.
Yeah, exactly. Truman.
Well, you know, it just strikes me that this island is pretty renowned for doing that. I'm thinking of Vashon Community Care. I'm thinking of the Bone Factory, you know, where these institutions are, you know, came together, community came together, and of course, in the terms of the Bone Factory, they've given it to the employees, you know, that sort of thing. I think it's really indicative of Vashon in particular.
Yeah. Mike, maybe tell us a little bit about what the trail will look like. What will people learn if they come to this meeting on Sunday?
Well, the trail could there's several ways the trail could look like. Some folks see it as the signage with historical information that's placed strategically around the community. Some have offered the suggestion of just a simple QR code that somebody could pull up the information on their phone. But essentially, it's, like I said, it's more of a routing around the community near where some historical piece of Burton once existed. For instance, the Vashon College up on the hill. Or near me was the Missionary Children's Home. There was the Smith Airplane Company down along the water. So we have all kinds of things that are no longer here that people have no clue used to be here. And so this is the signage is a way to educate folks and let them know what our history was.
I have a question about that. I've seen these history trails before, and they are really wonderful. I think they're fascinating. The one question I would have is: Are you going to somehow tie the signs or the information together so that if you could say, well, gee, I'm here at this point and I'm learning this. Now I need to go to this next point to learn the next step, or will they be completely independent?
Some of them will grow. For instance, there's what we're calling a school loop, and it goes up to the college, and then there used to be an elementary school up there, and then ties in with the Burton Elementary School and the old Burton High School. So there's an education component on one of the loops. But there would be, we would expect to have maps, and you would, you know, we're currently thinking of four separate loops. One is up to Judd Creek, then up past the skate park, and then back over and then down to Burton. Another one would be the Burton core of the business core. Another one is just a short loop up and around the fire station up by the college. And the fourth loop would be out on the Burton Peninsula. And each of those would have a map. And we're sensitive to that some people don't want strangers traipsing across their property saying, well, where was the old dance hall on the peninsula? You know, and we're very sensitive to that. And so something like that could be done from afar, perhaps down by the old dock where we could explain what the old steamship dock was. And then down the street, they came over to go to the dance hall and that kind of thing. So tie them together, but not necessarily do it on that property. Kevin.
Yeah, Mike, I was, you know, just last year took a little walk on the beach there where you're talking about where the old dock used to be and all the bricks that are found along that shoreline. Yeah, so there's so many elements of the life here on Vashon Mori that has disappeared. So, yeah, revitalizing that, all for it.
Yeah.
Right. So, Kim, there's going to be a meeting on Sunday at Camp Burton at, what, 3 p.m.? Is that correct?
3 o'clock to 5 o'clock is our schedule, yes.
And what's going to happen at the meeting, and what will people learn if they come to the meeting?
Oh, I should mention also Camp Burton, but Grisham Hall, and we'll have signs out to direct people. Mm-hmm. This is our inaugural meeting, I guess I would say, an opportunity to bring interested people together to explain our initial concepts of the trail. Really a lot to see kind of what the level of interest in our neighborhood is for taking on this project. I think, you know, so far we have gotten really positive feedback from people who have learned about the trail and learned about the meeting, but we also certainly want to be aware of community concerns. So that's something that we also hope will bring people to conversation on Sunday. And there's just a very small group of us to start. So our other hope is to bring people in. Lots of different ways to be involved in this project. As Mike said, this initial concept of four different trails, and there is a lot of work to do in terms of design, permitting, trying to raise funds, because of course this isn't free. And helping to just design in general.
Great. Yeah, Craig.
Craig.
Yeah, you're not actually part of the historical society. You're acting independently.
That's correct.
But you're coordinating with them, and I think you obviously have some cross-motionation with the personnel that are involved in, you know, in both. So it's basically a sort of a cooperative. They're helping out to a certain degree. Bruce is helping out. Is that correct?
That's correct. We've got Elsa Kronquist, the museum's executive director, is a resident of Burton. And so she's on our committee, acting as a resident. We are using Bruce as a consultant to help with some of the content. And the museum's got a wealth of information on old photographs and, you know, what was here back when. So,
Mike, didn't all those photographs originate from you?
Yeah.
Yeah. I'm just stealing them from the museum.
Mike is a little humble here, but Mike and Laurie Tucker have done a great job organizing the archives at the museum. And Mike in particular has archived and begun to index and digitize most of the Vashon newspapers beginning in the 1920s.
Wow.
19 teens. And now you're working on the 1970s, 60s, 70s right now. So ultimately, we'll have a very complete archive of Vashon newspapers and photographs and those kind of things. And this is indeed, the Heritage Museum is sort of what I would call as sort of a fiscal agent for communities, for projects like this. For instance, with Docton, when they wanted to put the trail together, did not want to form a 501(c) and become a nonprofit. So they came to the museum and asked the museum if we, as a 501(c) historical organization, could sponsor it. And we did. And we did that with the Ellisport Trail. We did that with the Tahlequah sign. And now we will eventually do that with this Burton Trail and with the trail being developed at Liza Beulah. So it's sort of the function of the Heritage Museum to assist communities in telling their own history. And so that's sort of the relationship that's going on.
And that's critical for our success in that we can then get folks to donate money tax-free through the museum. Folks are obviously more willing to donate when it's to a nonprofit. So, but it goes strictly to our project. It's a great cooperation with the museum.
I would also add that the museum has a really important relationship with the Puyallup tribe, and some initial connection has been made there, which, you know, given that we start our history here with being on their land, their presence and contributions will be extremely important, and we're fortunate to have the museum relationship to draw on there as well.
Great. So yeah, true.
Just a physical question. Do you see this as being like a walking trail where you would have a carry a map and walk the thing, or do you see it as driving?
Primarily it would be walking. Hmm. The signs aren't going to be so, we're not going to have so many signs that you couldn't drive it, but they're fairly short loops. Burton is a very walkable community, and we actually do have a ton of folks that walk around the Burton Peninsula and all of these loops, actually. So, yes, primarily walkable.
Oh, this is like a miniature version of the Freedom Trail in Boston.
Mm-hmm. Well, yeah,
without the big brass, bronze signs.
Yeah.
Right.
Yeah.
At least not yet.
Not yet. Yeah.
A little more demure than that, but basically the same concept, right?
Yeah.
Mike's first rendition of this trail concept of having the four trails was defined by difficulty. So, going up Burton Hill is the most difficult trail, and being in town, I think, is the easiest. We we decided not to rate by like hiking style, but instead by orientation to the community. But I like that as a start, Mike.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, you could put a funicular or a tow rope in there.
There you go. I was going to say crampon. Need the crampons to get up the hill.
So let me ask the Briefleys, did you guys know that there used to be a Native American museum in Burton?
No.
No.
And it was the Wainick Museum. And Mr. Wainick, he had a machine shop where across the street from the Burton Church is the old barber shop, Chop.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
That was the Wainick Machine Shop. Mm-hmm. And he also had this museum that was just north of the yacht club in a blockhouse and chock full of Native American artifacts. So,
wow.
All from the
your history lesson. Yeah. Craig?
Yeah, Bruce, last week or the week before, you threw out a number of how many of the original Native Americans, the first people lived around Burton. What kind of numbers were we talking about?
Well, we've been working with Brandon Raynon and the Puyallup tribe to try and sort of identify the number of residents. People always ask, well, how many Native people lived on Vashon Island? And when Brandon and I first worked on this 20 years ago, basically we came up with a figure of around 1,000 people. The tribe has done a lot of research, a lot of work with oral histories. We're sort of looking at sites, and archaeological digs. And right now, the estimation is probably around 10 to 12,000. Mm-hmm. Shobops people lived in the Quartermaster Harbor area. So fairly dense inhabitation of Burton Peninsula, all along the north shore of the inner harbor, and large village sites at Shawnee, at Magnolia, at Tahlequah. And some of these longhouses were 100 feet long, up to 400 feet long, and would house, 80 to 120 people. And so, our just estimations have changed. The other thing we did is we have two censuses that were done by Indian agents. In 1855 or 1854 and 1839. And there were 33 Shobops counted in 1854, and there were 315 counted in 1838-39. And when you take those numbers and you back through the pandemics that swept through the Puget Sound region, and you back those numbers up with the idea that anywhere from a third to a half of the people would have died in each epidemic wave, you end up with a range of somewhere between 5,000 and 40,000 people living on Vashon Island. So it has changed our mindset. And it's really, to me, it's a very fascinating blending of traditional ways of knowing, oral histories and tribal stories and tribal sort of knowledge, and Western the kind of historians that I am trained in, the Western historical tradition, putting those two together and coming up with a sense that are very similar kinds of results. And so I'm pretty convinced that we're probably 10 to 12,000 people living in the Quartermaster Harbor area before the first pandemics hit in the 1770s. So way, way larger numbers than we ever conceived of.
And are there more? I mean, I know there's one rather large shell midden on the Burton Peninsula there, but are there several of the shell middens throughout the area as well?
Yeah, they're all around the harbor. They are. Large village sites. I mean, the shell midden at Jensen Point, right, which was part of an archaeological dig in the right. late 90s,
right,
was actually probably not a large permanent village site, but a gathering site. But large sort of a village sites all along the north end of the harbor, over where Kingsbury Beach is, all along north of Burton in the inner harbor. And of course, the whole Burton Peninsula, the Docton area, Manzanita, Shawnee, Magnolia, all of those were very, very productive kind of sites for relatively large numbers of people.
Interesting.
So that's where we are at this point with that question. And again, it's we're still working to try and verify that number. And you know, we'll never be able to totally verify it. But when you go back and reread some of the journals of the first Europeans who voyaged into Puget Sound, they talk about sailing into Quartermaster Harbor and seeing the largest village sites they'd seen anywhere along the coast, with the most native inhabitants they'd seen anywhere along the coast. Hmm. And so that sort of gets you to thinking, well, wow, this must have really been a pretty substantial population center for the Schwabops people and for the people of South Puget Sound. So, Kim, tell us, remind us again of when this meeting's going to be.
This Sunday, June 4th, 3 o'clock to 5 o'clock p.m., of course, p.m., at Camp Burton, Grisham Hall.
Mm-hmm. In person only?
In person only, yes. Okay. Good to point out. Thank you.
Great. Mike, anything else to add? What if people want to get involved with this? If they can't come to the meeting, how can people get involved?
There's a number of ways they can keep tabs of what we're doing. We have a website, burtonhistorytrail.weebly.com, and that's W-E-E-B-L-Y. So burtonhistorytrail.weebly.com is our website. They can email us at burtonhistorytrail@gmail.com. And we're also on Facebook under Burton History Trail. So any of those ways, they can reach out to us and get more information.
Good. Well, thank you. Briefly, is there any other questions for these guys about the Burton History Trail?
I just want to say thanks a lot for doing that. I think it's fascinating. And one of those, I said that I'd experienced several of those. Of course, one of them is in Boston that Craig was pointing out, the Freedom Trail. But I find them fascinating, and I think it's a wonderful way to bring that history forward so that we can all enjoy it.
Yeah, I agree. I love the work that the Historical Society and this group of yours and the work that Mike does taking these photographs from 200 years ago that I think you took, didn't you actually take those?
Yeah.
Sharing the history. So, you know, we're not just the white middle-class ghetto that we've sort of become today. We're a lot more than that.
Yep.
Yeah, you know, I find just so in so many instances, people are just enamored with who's gone before. And like I do a fair amount of, I'm now getting back into doing a fair amount of hiking, which I've done for over a couple of decades now, and reading the history books that talk about who put that, who first arrived there in terms of course, colonialism and discovery, who first built homes there. Who are those explorers who wrote the histories that we can now read, and what paths did they take? And my hiking buddies are always kind of amazed that, okay, who else has been here before us on the same trail? It's really, people are, I think, really excited to hear about all those things. So really appreciate the work that's being done.
We appreciate you letting us come and share about the trail and our upcoming meeting. And thank you so much.
Yeah, thanks so much for the conversation.
Oh, you're more than welcome. And if any of our listeners are interested in doing a heritage trail, history trail in their own communities, and we've got them more coming around Vashon, but Mike, Kim, I'm sure that you would feel comfortable with them contacting you.
Absolutely.
Getting some information. So we may end up having a lot of these on Vashon at some point. Let's hope. But I want to thank you both for taking the time to come and share with us. And so again, the meeting is this Sunday, June 4th, right, at 3 p.m. Camp Burton what's the hall?
Grisham Hall.
Grisham Hall.
Grisham Hall, right. It's from 3 to 5 p.m. And Mike gave you the website and the email address and the Facebook site. So if you're interested, please come to the meeting. And if you can't come to the meeting, let Kim and Mike know, and they can get you involved in this project. So thank you guys very much. Appreciate it.
Thank you.
Take care.
So we will move now into just the last part of the briefly. Mike and Kim, you're more than welcome to stay and join the conversation if you want. If you need to run, we understand. So, but thank you for coming.
Thanks for having us.
So let's talk about some local stuff here. Water District 19 issued 28 new water shares. How significant is that for the brief lease?
Well, having worked at on the K2 project for quite a while, I'm kind of surprised to see them releasing that many shares, because they were pretty tight with them before. And I assume they're going to the waiting list to issue those. Is that the plan?
They actually had a lottery, I believe. Craig, do you know? I think
it was a lottery, and I ended up being, I'm the executor of an estate that received one of those shares.
Interesting. You know, I get a little nervous every time. I don't know the details of that, so I'm not in a position to praise or be critical, but I just know my knee-jerk reaction is I get nervous every time I hear about new shares being released, because the island's not getting any colder, although it might not be getting any wetter than it was this last winter. But that always concerns me. I assume that the parties who are in control of those decisions have done their homework and feel that they can afford to add those shares. I hope.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, Craig, I agree. There's some acquaintances of mine who point out that the water availability on Vashon is based on historic records, and the folks who look at those records can maybe look into the future a little bit, but we know that the rain patterns are supposed to be more torrential, which means less rain soaks into the ground, et cetera, et cetera. I will say that I do remember attending a Water District 19 meeting, because we have a small water system here, which I'm involved with. So I thought I should go hear what the big guys have to say. And what the meeting I went to was where King County had come over and said, we're going to help you find water here so you can expand the number of water shares. And I remember the commissioners sort of looking at each other like, Okay, well, we've been looking for water here for quite a while, so we'll see how this works out. So I don't know if more water was discovered or if more economies were discovered, because we are economizing, right, with the low flow water fixtures and things like that. So I certainly think it makes sense to, you know, be making adjustments as technology and the weather and the climate evolve. Whether 28 water shares is too much or not enough, you know, time will tell.
It might.
Yeah, wasn't that somewhat motivated by the development that the county wanted to put in on at 188th, and now they're actually moving dirt there? Mm-hmm. As I recall, there was somebody that was challenging the county, saying, how can you put this development in? And we've been on the whiting list for so long, and we can't get water. How come you can? So mm-hmm.
Yeah. I think
that was part of the motivation in this.
Yeah. There was a few people that were quite critical. Not, they weren't critical of low-income housing. They were critical of the process. They thought, even though it's an admirable cause, you still got to follow the rules.
Yeah.
So they, I'm not sure. I mean, obviously they're building those. And hopefully they resolve those due process or procedural issues.
Right. Well, one of my understandings is with the water district, the reason the water district sort of had a moratorium for so long is that they had several individuals who had blocks of water shares at the top of the list, as many as 25 or 30 water shares in a block, and they could not break those blocks. And so that sort of forced the hand of the water district to go into moratorium because they couldn't do partial kinds of things. And apparently some negotiations took place and that changed that allocation list. And they went to this lottery, apparently. So that's what led to that breakthrough. And we'll see what it means and see what it means for development on the island. Any other thoughts about Water District 19? Always an interesting topic. Mm-hmm. And Mike, congratulations on winning the lottery.
Yeah, thanks.
So the Chamber of Commerce is taking a new approach to First Fridays, beginning with First Friday in June, and terming them Vashon Summer Nights. And closing Main Street and making it more of a walking kind of shopping area for First Fridays every during the summer. Any thoughts about that from the Brieflies? Yeah, Craig.
I don't live in Burton any longer, so I don't have to drive through town, you know, yeah. to get home. I did live on the Burton Peninsula when I first came to the island 37 years ago. But my own feeling on the subject is I love it when they close the street. It's such a community, becomes such a community event. And they're talking about having music out there and people will be able to dance out there. And anytime we have an event like that, and we have a few, it just seems like a wonderful time to meet your neighbors. So I'm all in favor of it. I'm sure there will be critics.
Good. Any other thoughts from the Brieflies?
Just one question. Is it going to be from the four-way to the theater, basically? Is that where we're talking, or do you know?
Don't know the details. I think that's correct. Although they may block it either up at Cove Road,
yeah,
you know, or at the turnoff that goes back, you know, behind Thriftway in there. Because they need to provide access for people to get south of the theater.
Right, right.
So I've not seen the details of how they're going to do that.
Yeah, I vaguely remember hearing about like the Subway sandwich shop corner with a left turn to et cetera. So I have a feeling that it'll be somewhat north of the four-way as well.
Right.
Okay, cool.
Yeah, good. So on a national level, Craig, the Attorney General of Texas has been impeached. How significant is that? And what do you see sort of spinning out of that?
Well, you know, it's significant in a number of different ways. Politically, it's significant because that Texas legislature is mostly Republicans. And they voted, almost 120 to 20, give or take a few votes, to impeach him in the House. And now it goes to the Senate, not dissimilar to what the way we treat it at the federal level. This, I guess, would be if he is, in fact, impeached, which is questionable because you've got to have a two-thirds majority in the Senate after a full trial, which I guess is starting at the end of August. It'll be the third individual in the history of the state of Texas that's been impeached, one judge and one governor. And he would be the third individual if he got impeached. From a political standpoint, I thought it was fascinating because the attorney general is supported by the governor, supported by Donald Trump. So we've got that whole thing going on. And yet the Republicans in the House of Representatives still impeached him. Beyond that, it time will tell.
Do you think that's foretelling a bit of a lack, a loosening of Donald Trump's grip on any of us?
Well, at least in Texas.
Well, yeah, there is that.
But who can account for Texans?
I'm not going there. But believe me, I'm not going there.
It'll be fascinating to see how the attorney general has been impeached and now it goes to trial. And so it'll be interesting to see whether the conviction will come through as a result of that. And as you say, it takes a two-thirds majority, although it sounds like the case is pretty lock solid case. It's just a matter of whether as a political decision, it becomes important to live with your morals or forget your morals and vote with your beliefs. It's going to be interesting to see. Yeah, Kevin.
I was just trying to remember, and I did a quick search and I found that in Texas, the attorney general is elected. In some states, like I think in Texas, the governor appoints the secretary of state, but I'd have to double check that. So the reason I looked that up is I was wondering, I hadn't heard Abbott weighing in one way or the other, and thinking, oh, if he appoints the attorney general, maybe he has some sort of an agenda about why he's not speaking up. But given that it's an elected position, you know, Abbott wouldn't necessarily have that kind of direct influence over who gets the seat if the impeachment were to happen. So hard to say, but interesting to see how it happens. I do certainly, as the 2024 presidential election comes along and, you know, echoing words from Liz Cheney, I will do everything I can to keep Donald Trump out of the White House. And they asked, does that mean you'd run for office? And she says, I'll do everything I can to keep, et cetera. So it'll be very interesting to see how the Republican Party coalesces or splinters.
Is that your formal announcement, Kevin? Are you running for president?
I'm running away from the presidential candidates. I know other Brieflies have proudly declared their candidates.
Yes, yes. Yeah. Michael in the past, that's right.
I'm not going to go there.
There was a fascinating article in the Seattle Times this weekend about the number of billionaires in Washington state. I don't know if any of you saw that, but Forbes magazine estimates that there's anywhere from 12 to 16 billionaires in the state of Washington. But the income process in Olympia puts that number probably in the 80 to 110 range.
Wow.
With over 700 people in the state of Washington worth over $250 million or quarter billionaires. So that sort of came about because the state of Washington has a new state tax on capital gains of more than $250,000 a year, which means if you sell stock or whatever and you earn more than $250,000, you pay a capital gains tax on it. that generated, that new tax has generated, it was expected to generate about $200 or $300 million. It generated $850 million.
Wow. So
my question is, out of those 700 quarter billionaires and 100 plus billionaires in Washington state, how many are on Vashon?
Truman, how many of your friends?
Well, yeah, you know, I besides me, I think there's probably 8 or 10, and I don't know. But
well, you know, we used to, like I said, we used to count Subarus. Now we count
Teslas. You know, that's right.
Teslas, and we may be counting McLarens and Ferraris here pretty soon.
Yeah. Yeah, Kevin.
I'll just say that there is really no significant challenge to balancing the federal debt. So.
Yeah,
we can do it in Washington State. The other Washington maybe will follow suit.
There you go.
All right. Well, we're out of time, so let me say thank you for Mike and Kim for coming along. The next edition of the Brown Briefly will have Nikki Wilkes, Executive Director of the Journeyman Institute, to discuss the work of the Journeyman. So for Kevin, Kim, Truman, Mike, Craig, I'm Bruce Hallman. We will see you next week on the Brown Briefly. Thank you.